Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Book and a Chat with me, Barry.
Get up in the morning, sag a thing you do, put on the kettle, make a little brew, that'll do you. Tickety-boo. See you, Jimmy, don't you agree? Only one thing better than a nice cup of tea, and that'll be two. Tickety-boo. Blow away the cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in the morning, or in the afternoon, or in the evening too. Cheer yourself up, pour yourself a cup, tickety-boo.
Good evening, one and all. Oh, yes, halfway through June. We're not halfway through June, but third of the way through June. In fact, school's out for summer in a lot of places, as you used to say. Only in America, I might add. Holidays are very different for schools in America to England, especially, and Europe even more so. They have these four quarters things in a lot of places in Europe, where four terms of equal length with equal holidays after that. But of course, in America, you get nearly 3 months off for summer, which could be why the education level is not so good. But I'm not going to go there. In England, we break up the end of July and go back the first week in September, pretty much when the schools go back to in America. But as I say, they don't break up till the end of July. And one of the things, well, we have a little bit now, but didn't have when I was at school for many, many years. We don't have things like graduation because we take exams. We don't have, if you like, stuff through the year to get marks on. You have some of that towards the exam, like term amounts and how you did during the terms and stuff like that. But it's not as simple as in America. And it could be what exams you take. You could have left them. When I was at school, you could leave with your parents' permission when you were 15. And there was people who perhaps weren't very educated and they're going to go and work with their father's scrap metal company or something like that. And then when you were 16, you could take your O levels or GCSEs and take those exams. And you took those exams in May. So a lot of people left straight after May once you've taken the exam, because otherwise you're sitting there nothing else to do, sort of thing, unless you've got something special set up for you for the next months till we broke up from summer. But a lot of people then stayed on till they were 18 to take their A levels. And if they took their A levels, depending on the marks, that's when they went to college. So none of this, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to college, buy me a new car, like happens in America. You know, we left at different times. So because you leave at different times, you don't have the class of such and such, because people left at different times. You know, they didn't all graduate and stuff. So there is some differences, though. I think there are some of that sort of thing these days. But in America, it's, what do you have? Graduation from kindergarten, graduation from juniors, graduating from high. Yeah, just a few graduations. Somebody's very good, didn't they, selling all this celebration stuff. I think it's to do with limo rentals myself, but that's another story. Anyway, I am here to talk about something that, as a subject, has changed very much over my lifetime, which is, 72 years now, and it's not perhaps as like it used to be, perhaps the stigma that resulted in stuff not as it used to be. And with the things like, you know, the DNA testing and everything like that, perhaps is open doors for things not to be like they used to be. But we better find out what it was, and like, because I better introduce my guest. That would start things off good, wouldn't it? Oh my goodness, I knew we were going too well. I said to my guest, we're going too well, things are working very quickly. Anyway, I better introduce my guest, because on the show I have the one and only Janet Sherland. Hi Janet, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, and good evening.
Good evening to you. Now, before we'll talk about the title and give people a bit of an idea before we go into this, because, you know, you had this on your mind to write a book. It's not like, I mean, you enjoyed writing and stuff like that, but it's not like you set out to do this, that, and the other. This is one thing that's affected your life and you sat down and you wanted to write it and share your experience with it and the results of it in your book, Abandoned at Birth, The Darker Side, if you like, of Adoption. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. I was abandoned as an infant. My birth mother had me, never looked at me or regarded me in any way after giving birth to me, and turned me over to the hospital nurses, who then turned me over to a adoption agency. And I don't remember a point in life where I didn't wonder where I came from, why I looked like I did, who I was, why I was given up. Those of us born in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, in the era of closed adoptions, had all connection to our heritage and our origin story taken from us and hidden legally. And 40 states in the United States still have those birth records sealed.
40 states.
Yes,
Oh my
yes.
goodness, that's.
In fact, my home state of New Jersey, I'm, almost 70 years old, and my birth parents and adoptive parents have all passed away. The state of New Jersey still has my records sealed, and legislators decide that I shouldn't have the right to know who I really am, what my ethnicity is, and what my origin story is.
See, I can remember a little bit, only a little bit older than you, but I can remember sort of 50s and 60s. Now, when I was growing up, I guess it must have been when my mother had this, my sister. So it must have been very late 50s or early 60s. My mother used to look after babies between like 6 weeks and 6 months while they were looking for adoptive pair, people to adopt these babies. I mean, we used to have them sometimes for a month or two. We had one for 6 months, and I know if my parents had been able to afford to keep them, we would have done that. And that my dad wouldn't let my mother do it again after that because it just hurt her too much, giving it, letting the baby go. And but then you look back at that, and there was, don't want to say more babies available for adoption because these days it's an international thing. In those days, it was the stigma of, unmarried mothers and everything like this. That was more so, and the thing to do was get the children adopted. And it was most a lot of children, a lot of with young parents or something like that happened. Obviously, these days there is not so much stigma. I mean, my own daughter's a single mother. But what there is people are finding out that they can't have children and looking to adopt children earlier because before it's, oh, we keep trying. Now, with the way medical's gone, people can go and find that, well, for whatever reason, other people can't have children and they look to adopt. So it has changed, hasn't it?
Yes, the reasons have changed. As you're saying, back in the 50s and early 60s, it was the shame of the birth mother to have had premarital sex. We don't really care about that anymore,
Cracking
but
up.
there are other issues now. There are judgment of, say, the socioeconomic status of the birth mother, and there's not a lot of support for a single parent or a single mother, and they'd rather insist that the child be given to a wealthier family or family that can provide more for the child. But it's also, we certainly need adoption. There are always going to be children that
Oh,
need a
always,
family and
always, yes.
families that want. But what we need to talk about and what we need to acknowledge is that love is not enough. And for, we hear about the needs and the wants of both the biological parents and the adoptive parents, but we need to talk about what the adoptee needs. And adoptees are not infants, and infants aren't blank slates. And they experience a real trauma when they are separated from their birth mother, and they are given to strangers to be raised with no understanding. And now that's changing to, there are more open adoptions now, but there's more recognition of this. But when you are separated from everything that has connected you to this world and to people that act like you and move like you and talk like you and everything that's a very physical, historical, genetic, emotional, existential kind of connection.
Right.
When that is severed and you're being raised by strangers, there is such a emptiness and a blankness and a feeling of rejection and abandonment and loss inside of you and grief that needs to be recognized. And the adoptive parents need to know that they need to recognize that, respect, acknowledge and respect where that child originated and came from, in order to help them, because their needs aren't being, you know, for many years, adopted children were treated more like a commodity, you know, something to be traded between people.
Oh, you hear and, that and with the international stuff all the time, isn't it? I mean, you know, well, we got one from China, or we got from, you know, I mean, be it stars or be it normal people, you know, it is a commodity in a lot of ways.
Yeah. After World War II, that became very true.
Yeah. Very true after World War II, How old were you when you were told you were adopted, may I ask?
We always knew. My parents shared that as our bedtime story. And so while we all knew we were adopted and that's how we came to be, we didn't really talk about what that meant or how that might feel. You know, of course, back then, no one talked about feelings and emotions as much either.
Exactly, yeah.
But, you know, our story was sort of akin to parents telling their child, oh, you know, the stork brought you, or whatever, you know, sort of fairy tale that parents used. So we knew we were adopted. We understood kind of what that meant, but we didn't talk about it amongst ourselves, or there was no recognition of how different and odd and sort of other we might feel, and how disconnected we might all feel from each other, because there was such a prevalence back in the 60s of believing that nurture was more important than nature.
Yep.
And in my experience, nature is 95% of the game. And unless you know and understand what you have in you, it's really impossible to create a healthy and intact sense of self.
Did it affect your, you know, things like, I don't know, trust and how you valued yourself knowing that you were adopted?
Yes, it did. And they are, you know, sociologists will list the seven core issues that are really disrupted when a child is adopted. There's like separation, trust, rejection, guilt, shame, identity, intimacy, loyalty. There are all sorts of issues that have been identified and studied as and adoptees have four times the suicide rate of the normal population.
Really?
And they have. Yeah. And they're very overrepresented in the penal system and in, you know, mental and addiction hospitalizations.
Yeah, I've had some people on before which have gone into, for whatever reason, you know, something about the mental situation and stuff like that. And a large number of those were adopted. It's almost like their belief in basic human nature wasn't there. They don't have any belief in themselves. And thus they're open to being led down into some very dark alleys.
Well, it's amazing that, you know, the primal, almost, there are no words for this primal, almost animal human connection we have with our parents, with our birth parents. The soldier dying on the field calls out for his mother. You know, there is a prime connection that we feel with our mother. And when that's severed and you know that your mother gave you away, and that no one in your blood family wanted to keep you, it's such a feeling of rejection and loss and grief. And you're always wondering who they are and why. And many adoptees talk about feeling like they won't be whole until they make that connection again. You know, that connection was severed, and they just was searching for that birth mother to just sort of feel for even a moment, just that reconnect again and feel like they're whole and they're safe. Mm-hmm. And that can be a lifelong search for those of us who had that taken from us at birth.
A lot of times you hear that people who are given up at birth hunt their birth mother to ask why. They gave them up. And I think that perhaps once was more important. These days perhaps isn't so much because of, you know, how people are these days. But that was one of the reasons, I think, to my mind, that parents didn't want their children to find them.
Yeah, it was... Yes, but I think that why a lot of that drives a lot of that impulsive search, you know, why? And sort of a child, you know, we all recognize that children often feel when their parents are, say, arguing, when their parents get divorced,
Yeah.
children feel it's their fault.
Oh,
They've
with the
done something
divorce stuff.
wrong.
Oh, definitely with the
Yeah.
divorce stuff, yeah.
And so I think when you've been given away, you also feel like, what did I do wrong? You're a
Exactly.
child. You don't have,
What did I, you blame yourself? Yeah. What did I do? Was it, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, you're an infant, you could have done anything wrong,
Yeah.
but that's not your understanding of life as a child. So you form this opinion of yourself as being less than and disconnected. And it's very uncomfortable. And I just had this compulsion to write this book because
Oh,
it
that's
not
great.
only told my story, but it also, nowadays, we're facing so many other issues, things like the 40 states that still have adoption
Yeah.
records sealed.
I'm
And I
surprised
thought,
that
well,
many
people
these days,
probably,
yeah. Yeah.
yeah, maybe people don't understand what it means to the adoptee. And so maybe if I tell my story and get out there, they'll think differently. They'll have a different point of view when they're going to vote on that issue. Or donor-conceived individuals these days are struggling this, and they're saying, we need to know more about our father than that he was specimen 123.
Yeah.
And not everyone understands why that's important. And so all these issues, there are many issues that are new issues for us that we're dealing with as a society and a culture. And I think having a basic understanding of being disconnected and robbed of having some knowledge of how biological identity and belonging is, that you're being part of a clan. Human beings, animals, we all live and we're social beings. We live in clans and groups. And you know, being connected in the present time and back through time with the stories and the lineage of your family is primal. It's something, and you can't say it's not important. And so, having a greater respect for, I think, the biology of belonging and identity may help us as we face new issues that continue to occur.
Do they also have it so sealed that you couldn't know if you had a sibling, whether
Yes. Oh, they're complete.
yeah.
Back in the baby scoop era, they called it, the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You knew absolutely nothing, not one shred of information. It was totally. My birth certificate has my adoptive parents' name on it.
Wow.
There's, you know, there's nothing else. So, and that's the legal birth certificate. You know,
Yep,
you could
yep.
hunt all you want and ask all you want, and that was it. So. No, there was no information. You know, certainly we've do better now. There are more open adoptions where,
Yep.
you know, the birth parent is known to the parent. And I haven't had experience with that, so I don't know. You know, we all probably hear stories about the good and the bad at success of that. And I think we keep evolving
Yeah.
what we expect in those
We do.
situations. But and I'm glad to see that. But it's those in many years where things were sealed mostly in that era because of shame, you know,
Yes.
and
Yeah. Yeah.
why should the shame of the birth mother be more important than the mental health and identity and heritage of the child she has?
Well, this is because the child
You
doesn't
know,
have a
it just
vote. Child never had a voice, and this is the thing. You know, it was
right.
the family used to, used to, back Victorian days, used to send them away, didn't they? They used to send them to some long distant
Yes,
aunt in another country, and wait for them to come back,
right.
and sort of thing. In finding your own mother, your own both birth parents. Now, I know that from reading about it, when you did find about your mother, you found that she didn't even want to know you. And I must admit, I've had a friend of mine who's when his wife gave birth, she didn't want to touch her baby for 6 months. So I can understand that part. But in your case, I'm thinking it's more the shame, because the father wasn't around anymore, from what I read. And that must have been hard to sort of come across that my mother didn't even want to hold me. That's terrible.
It was, well, and my birth father didn't even know he had conceived a child. He learned when he was 75 years old that I
Oh
existed.
my
So,
goodness. Oh.
he was no part of it. But yeah, she could not get
Oh
past
dear,
the
dear, dear.
shame. And it didn't make sense. It was, you know, 10 years ago, say, and you know, I was in a second marriage. We were all, you know, grown. I didn't want anything from her except to know her. And she just couldn't She just couldn't let me in. She just couldn't get over it. We did meet a couple of times, but there was never a relationship or a connection, which was very different from the experience I had with my birth father, because the agency just happened to have his name, which was unusual. They didn't need it back then. And that was just a wonderful and tremendously healing experience.
That's good. In your book, Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me, very moving book, very obviously, you know, it's your heart and soul and your life in it. And as you said, one of the questions I always ask is, you know, the response and that. And this is the sort of book that it must touch a lot of people. There are a lot of people, not just out there, but in one way or the other, that have been affected by such a thing. What sort of comeback have you had from these people? I know it's only come out a month or so.
It's been wonderfully gratifying. First of all, adoptees are contacting me or talking to me if I know them and saying, you know, they cried all through it. That is the truth of their lives. And so it's wonderful to affirm and connect with the others that experienced it. But I'm also very amazed by the response of non-adoptees in people who maybe know someone who's adopted or have been affected by it, but also people who've had all different kinds of losses. Even parents who got divorced and, you know, a parent moved overseas or they didn't see them often, or in so many different kinds of loss, people are saying they were just so touched by the book. I wrote it to be very emotional. I wrote to capture emotion. I didn't want to just tell a story. I wanted readers to feel the feelings of loss and grief and emptiness that adoptees feel, to try and better have an emotional intelligence about it. And people are saying that, you know, that writing of loss and has just stirred up so many of their own experiences, and we've all experienced loss or feelings of being rejected or unwanted, I've been so, so overwhelmed and gratified by the response and how universal those feelings are. I think it's so true that the more specific we are, the more universal we become. And I think people are, you know, just reading the human experience in the story and outside of the issue of adoption. It's just sort of a story of coming to be.
I can imagine people reading your book, both people who've given up children and the children that have been adopted, and your book pushing them to take that final step to actually search for each other. Have you come across that at all?
Yeah. I have had people say that, like, gee, I didn't, but now I will. My own brother, my younger brother, had always said, he said I was being very that he was being very defensive throughout life. He thought, well, if they don't want me, I don't want them. But he said after reading my book, he said, gee, I wish I had searched, and I think I'll do it now to see, you know, probably his parents are gone, but, you know, what other relatives may be out there, and learn more about his true identity and also be able to pass that along to his children. And so, yes, I have had that response, and I've had adoptive parents say, gee, my children aren't yet, you know, looking distressed or asking questions, but knowing these things now, I will have a greater sensitivity in talking to them or trying to support them.
That's something that it has been, is missing. I mean, there are a few out there, but just to look at it, you know, just a simple children's book, you know, so I'm adopted, what does that mean, sort of thing, you know, a simple children's book, you know, about to put it in language that children can understand. I mean, I always say this about things like the Holocaust. I think there's a gap there that people need to understand that, for instance, and stuff like that. Obviously, the way DNA is now, I mean, everybody's looking at their biological roots and stuff like that. That must, if you're looking for things, does that help, do you think, or does it get in the way of stuff?
Yeah, no, I think it does. And I know the social worker that worked with in my adoption agency and helped make, you know, connections between people they placed. She has said, you know, she used to be so busy doing this, and now with DNA, everyone just goes to DNA. Right. That wasn't available when I searched. And she said the only issue she finds with that is that people often do it without any preparation, and they haven't read enough or talked it through enough, and then they're disappointed about something, or they don't handle something, or they feel overwhelmed and surprised by the intensity of their emotions. So it's great and people are finding each other, it really takes some navigating, because when you find your biological family, it's not all roses and lollipops. And also then you're faced with, who was I raised to be as an adoptee? You know, what was the nurture of my life? And who am I actually, you know, the nature of my life? And integrating those two realities into your understanding of self can be a struggle, or a challenge. And it requires some thought and some reflection and some guidance in some cases. So it's wonderful to have that open up when you just are faced with a blank wall or no way else to know. But there, you know, you sort of need some help, I think, sometimes in facilitating the actual reunion or continuing,
yes,
you know, growing a relationship.
Well, and I'm sure your book will help a lot of people, you know, get some pre-knowledge and understanding perhaps before they take that final plunge, because as you say, a lot of people aren't prepared for the I'm sure you should see how you agree that the sort of heartaches and the traumas and the trials and everything of going through this and the, you know, letdowns, and as you say, you know, you get so far and then it's sealed and you can't find where it is, and I can only imagine. I really can. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's been, I had one wonderful experience and one awful experience, and it, you know, there's everything in between. So, and it sometimes can be hard to face, you know, if you have a birth parent or a biological family that has a lot of issues in it, it can be, you know, a little difficult to swallow everything you learn. But you have to do that too, because in a biological family, you don't get to choose whether people in your family have issues or not. That's just a part of your family. So I think it's really important for adoptees and others searching to search with an open heart and mind and just accept and learn to integrate the good and the bad, because it's all a part of you. And you can't be an authentic person unless you incorporate all that into yourself. So.
Very, very true. And I mean, that's a wonderful phase to finish, as our time is running out. That really is. And that says it all. I'm going to hand the show over to you now so you can tell us all about Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me, and you know, about where you can get it and about where your website is and all that. So over to you.
Thank you. My website is abandonedatbirthbook.com, and on Instagram I'm at Janet Sherland Official. And my book is sold wherever books can be bought. Amazon, of course, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, hopefully your local bookstore. There's also an audiobook available and an ebook. And, you know, I hope that readers pick it up and read it, and it just opens conversations and opens their mind to an experience that they may not have personally experienced, but I think it's still very, it's important for all of us and important even for themselves and their sense of understanding of family and love and belonging.
Very true. Well, Janet, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It has been thoroughly interesting and entertaining chatting to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you go. My guest today, Janet Sherland, Sherlund, and we've been talking about her memoir, very wonderful book, and it's a lot of use, and a lot of people, as she said, already sort of picked it up, and it's helped a lot of people, and hopefully it will continue to help a lot of people. And the book is Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me. I tell you, it's a lot of people should read it. I think it's the sort of book that should be very easily available for people out there. Really do. Anyway, that's it for now. I'm actually not around tomorrow, so we'll have an old show tomorrow, because I'm actually going to our local baseball team playing tomorrow, so I'm going to see that tomorrow. But that's it. That's it for now. So until I speak to you next time, there's only one thing left to say. Don't forget...
Cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in the morning. In the afternoon or in the evening too, cheese up, up, pour yourself a cup. Tickety-boo, tickety-boo. Isn't that nice? All a cup of tea that makes you feel good twice. One love for two. Tickety-boo.
good to get along.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Book and a Chat with me, Barry.
Get up in the morning, second thing you do, put on the kettle, make a little brew, that'll do you. Tickety-boo. See you, Jimmy, don't you agree? Only one thing better than a night.